you know, way of my parents approaching food with me and my grandparents, who I would visit, absolutely, there was no getting up until everything was consumed, whether I was done or not. And so that really messes with our self-regulation. And kids have that ability to regulate how much they need, not just from a caloric standpoint, but also macronutrients. So if we give kids the tools and the right presence of foods on the table at the right time, they should eat protein when they need it or eat less if they've had too much. They should eat as many, you know, carbs as they need and fat and so on. They would be making those decisions based on the nutrients their body needs. Mm-hmm. So kids don't typically eat a balanced meal in one sitting, especially younger kids.
Hi, welcome to Partners in Upbringing. I'm Kalyani.
I'm Himani.
And we are parents just like you.
Always on a lookout. So come join us in our endeavor as we connect with parenting experts and fellow inspiring parents to know the best practices for raising happy and confident children.
Visit partnersinupbringing.com for podcasts, videos, blogs, and to connect with experts. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Partners in Upbringing.
You can listen to us on your favorite podcasting app, Partners in Upbringing, your trusted partner in your parenting journey.
Himani, today's topic is one of the biggest challenges both of us have faced as parents, or should I say continue to face?
Can't agree more. I'm still struggling. I mean, when Anna was born about 6 years ago, she was a tiny baby. And all I wanted as a mother was to feed her well for her to become healthy and strong. And over the years, I have invested so much time and effort to bring new recipes, to, you know, make the food colorful, to sit beside her patiently, feed her, and most importantly, to finish her plate. But I have to say, it has been a long journey and an exhausting one. I mean, in spite of all the efforts we put as parents, I mean, I put as a parent, she still continues to be a picky eater and a really slow eater.
Oh dear, I don't know where do they get this from. Because amongst both my kids, my daughter who is 4 eats like a goat. She's so excited and talking about food all the time. Whereas my son Ishan, who just turned 7 now, still continues to be picky. And he's so engrossed in his thoughts, in his play, that even though he has a morsel of food in his mouth, it's just parked on one side. And I have to remind him, oh God, just swallow that and finish your plate. And I try a lot not to force.
I can imagine. And
I try a lot not to force feed them. But how much patience can we show? At the end of the day, we tend to get angry and It's so tough.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, mealtime, sometimes I feel that, you know, we want it to be a family bonding activity, but it becomes more of a struggle and a challenge. And there are so many of us whom we have spoken to, our listeners, our, you know, our friends, and even other parents who are going through the same problem of inculcating the right eating habits in their children. So today, to help us with this particular problem, we will be discussing strategies. Yes, you heard me right. We are going to strategically do it and not chase it anymore. And we have a very special guest with us today, all the way from Toronto, Daniel Binns. Daniel.
Hi, everyone.
Hello. Hello, Daniel. So before I introduce Daniel to you all, we have a small surprise for you. Daniel has shared with us 2 downloadables. The first one is about 10 questions you should ask your child at meal times to avoid fights over food. And the second one is 60 high calorie and nutrition dense foods. Now, this is a gold mine, I think, for parents. Me and Kalyani really found it useful and practical to do. And thanks to Daniel, she's agreed for us to share it with you all. All you need to do is go on Instagram on Partners in Upbringing and tag 3 of your friends who you think this would be useful for them. You can do so by tagging them on our Picky Eater posts in the comments section. Don't forget, any of the Picky Eaters post in the comments section, and we will DM the links to you. So on that note, introducing Daniel Binns to y'all. Daniel is a certified nutritionist, a wellness consultant, and a picky eater expert. She's a mom to three beautiful girls and has helped hundreds of parents through her coaching program. You can check out her website and her social media handles. We have shared it in our description box. And now it's time to welcome Daniel. Hi, Daniel. Welcome to Partners in Upbringing. And thank you so very much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. This is fun.
Daniel, first, I would like to understand, are kids born as picky eaters, or is it some wrong parenting technique which leads them to be so?
So it's interesting, right? There's, you see some elements of genetics play a role in picking in some cases. So you'll see a child who, right from the get-go when they're born, they struggle with nursing or a bottle. And so there is obviously an underlying challenge there that would have, you know, would have been associated with birth. But then there's children who start to develop picky eating habits and patterns as they get a bit older. And that then can be associated with a number of factors. Part of it is just a developmental shift that happens around the ages of, you know, 1 to 3. Children are, they recognize they're their own person. There's this need for independence and control. And it really fuels the picky eating, because eating is one of the only things that kids do control. What goes in their mouth, parents decide everything else. And so when, you know, this is why their first word is no, because when they realize I'm separate from my mom, and now I can actually, I have some control over what my life looks like, and eating is one of the first things that's affected. So to answer your question, it's actually a bit of, it's a bit of both. It can be either a nature or a nurture.
Okay. Daniel, could you tell us, you know, what should be the approach when you get to know that you have a picky eater in the house? Because all the first time moms, the only thing that bothers them is when the kid doesn't eat well.
Right. You know, yeah, it is. And it's a huge stress, as you guys were mentioning, you know, as we were kicking this talk off. We feed our kids 5 times a day in many instances, and having it as you know, be stressful or be challenging is really a weight on parent shoulders. So in terms of how to approach it, it really is the million-dollar question. It depends on the child. Kids are picky for different reasons, and there's, you know, really a spectrum of picky eating. So if a child has some underlying challenges, be it sensory, oral, motor, food anxiety, any type of negative association with eating in the past that has fueled a fear of eating, then we need to approach it a little bit more delicately. If it's a child who's a developmental picky eater, who's just gone through, you know, went through the phase of that independence, that need for control, and parents didn't know how to approach it properly, so it spiraled or snowballed over time, then, you know, with that child, you know they're capable of eating much more, but they've just fallen into a rut, and that food list is shrinking over time because we don't know the right tools or strategies. So with that, you know, with a developmental picky eater, you really want to, we need to find this balance of challenging our kids, but in a way that doesn't push them the other direction, right? Because you see the power struggle happening, and it's parents trying to push their kids to eat, child wants their independence, and now we're not going anywhere. So we need to give our kids some space so that they do have some control, but also not too much. Because what happens is when parents don't see their kids eating variety, or they're not having a balanced meal, we encroach in that space and we do a couple things. It might be, you know, nudging our kids, bribing them with dessert. Hey, you can't have your chocolate until you have your dinner. It might be there's no TV, or maybe we put the screen in front of them because they're mindlessly eating at that point, or we can scoop food into their mouth. Maybe we chase them around. And so what's happening is we're making our lives more difficult by trying way too hard to get our kids to eat. Really, we should just be deciding what to serve, and our kids should be choosing from what we offer. The other thing I often see, guys, is you know, a child will resist and say, "Oh, I don't like this. I won't eat this." And then we go back to the kitchen to make a plan B. But now we're just teaching our kids that, oh, okay, well, if you don't have to eat tonight's dinner, because if you resist and push back hard enough, mommy's going to be too worried. So I'm just going to go get you something else. I'll go get you your grilled cheese or your rice or whatever that favorite food is. So now all we're doing is we're strengthening that picky eating behavior, if that makes sense.
Yes, absolutely.
Daniela, you just mentioned that we should cook what we want them to eat and let the child choose. But then in that case, won't they always choose the carbs, maybe the breads, the rice, the chapatis, and leave the vegetables and other things aside?
Well, it depends, right? So if in the spirit of challenging our kids, you know, we don't have to have those foods present at every meal. Right. So there can be your form of starch or carb could be sweet potatoes. It could be a starchy vegetable. Yes. You know, even with my kids, if the bread is present, bread is easy. It's a quick source of energy. It's they know what to expect from bread. It's tasty. And so, yes, they're going to gravitate to that. But the more we do, we implement, when I see approaching feeding, I see a number of strategies like this foundation that needs to be in place. And so if we're doing all of these other little things, then, and we're nourishing their interest in food, the thing is, kids actually don't want to be picky. They want to be the child that can go to a restaurant and choose anything off the menu. They want to be able to go to a party and be able to eat off the snack table, or they don't want to feel limited or incapable of eating these other foods. It's just, sometimes they need a little bit of help. Because to us, you know, it's just food, you know, it's just, you know, broccoli, or it's just, you know, bok choy or whatever the vegetable is. But to a child, they don't know how that food's going to feel in their mouth. They don't know if they're going to be able to manage it. Is it going to make them sick? And so this is a protective mechanism and a behavior they go through. So it's actually a stage, it's called food neophobia, and it's a fear of foods that even animals in the wild go through. That again, it protects them from making the wrong decisions and eating something that's poisonous. So it actually serves a purpose. The problem is, it's just taken too far. So yeah, the kids will choose the path of least resistance. They'll choose the foods that are easier if they're offered. So when I make foods for my kids, we don't usually have bread on the table. Very rarely do we have that present, because that's, you know, typically what we consume. So I will, maybe if I do offer a bread, then I'll offer a more challenging bread that has maybe some olives in it, or greens, or some herbs on it, or something like that. So at least if they're eating their bread, it's a new exposure.
And what if they don't choose anything? You mentioned, let's not go to the kitchen and cook something different for the child. But then some kids can really stretch. And I've seen mine do that, oh, I'll just skip a meal. It's so easy. Because it's mom's requirement that I eat. I'm not hungry. Of course, they'll be cranky later, but they won't accept that they are hungry and want to eat something.
Well, you know, and it depends, again, when you think about the child, like what was driving the picky eating behavior. So if it's a child, there's about 5% of the pediatric population who are really struggle with eating, and they will actually avoid eating. They will, quote unquote, starve themselves because the fear of eating outweighs the value that they get from hunger. So their appetite is actually shut down because they're in a stressed mode, right? So with those kids, we really want to make sure there's something easier for them to eat at the table. Doesn't have to be bread, right? But whatever, something from their safe list so that they know that when they come to the table, there's always something there that they can eat.
If you are enjoying this conversation, please subscribe to us and give us a 5-star rating on the platform you're listening to. Thank you.
For the developmental picky eater, we can similarly have something you know they're capable of eating. It doesn't have to be the easiest food, but if I know I'm doing all these little strategies that are part of my picky eater protocol, we're doing all those things. We checked all those boxes. and we're not doing the things we shouldn't be doing, that this is just developmental picky eating and they're just stubborn and have a strong personality, it's not a medical issue or other underlying concern, then you've done everything you can. And so it's okay for our kids to experience hunger, assuming they're hungry for the right. Like, we want it's okay for our kids to make mistakes as well with food. So there's going to be times your kids won't eat just to prove to you, I'm not going to eat what, you know, you've got on the table. But then they're going to understand like what hunger feels like. And that's an important sensation for them to have, because we need, parents are so concerned about their kids going hungry that children don't experience true hunger. They're grazing throughout the day. They're getting a snack. So if they didn't eat a lunch, then have something else, half an hour later that they like a favorite, I don't know, granola bar or baked good or whatever that may be for the child. But then they don't get those highs and lows of feeling satiated and feeling that hunger. And then their blood sugar is, it's kept high all day because they haven't had those breaks in between and the opportunity to develop an appetite. They can have confidence and comfort knowing that, okay, I did everything I possibly could. Mm-hmm. So now that's my child's decision and I'm going to be okay with it. Because as soon as you go back into the kitchen and make them something else, we've now
lost
created
the
an expectation. Yeah, exactly.
Daniel, you mentioned that, in the stress environment, their appetite really shuts down. And the first thing that came to my mind, I can relate to right now, is my daughter, when she sees a portion of food which is served to her, she decides that she can't finish this. And just 5 minutes before that, she's told me that she's very hungry. And she's been waiting for food. And why am I so late in serving the food? The minute I serve it and she sees that in the plate, she thinks that she won't be able to finish it. She, says that I'm not going to eat so much. She decides it. She portions it. After maybe 1.5 hours, she will feel hungry again. And at that time, she will tell me, can I eat bread? Can you give me bread butter? Or can you give me a biscuit or a cookie, stuff like that. So I don't know what happens, and it could be a favorite food as well. So I wanted to understand why does this happen?
Yeah. So I think you're saying your daughter gets a plate of food and then and seemed turned off by the food or doesn't seem to want to eat the whole thing. Is that right? Yeah. So, it's interesting. One thing I find with kids is when we put food on their plate, we assume it tells our kids, here's how much I want you to eat. Here's what mom or dad expects you to have, this much fish and this many chips or whatever the case is. But when we think about kids wanting to control what they actually consume by pre-plating their meals and putting food on it, it's telling them this is how much we expect you to eat. And so that in itself can create that power struggle. Maybe your daughter had enough protein for the day. Maybe she had her caloric intake in other ways. So she doesn't need all of that. So that's where I'm actually happy or satisfied when my kids don't eat everything on their plate. I'm okay with that. So I grew up in an environment where I had to clean my plate. So I say I have clean plate syndrome today as an adult, because my parents always said, you need to eat everything. This food's not going to go to waste. But to this day, even when my husband always leaves stuff on his plate and it drives me nuts, so I end up eating. Or if the kids have things left, or as I'm putting the plate into the dishwasher, I'm eating the food. I just, it's funny how this approach has
We are trained to do that.
Yeah, right?
To eat the leftovers of our kids.
Yeah, and it's not always the best food, right? So and that all stemmed from a very innocent, way of my parents approaching food with me and my grandparents, who I would visit. Absolutely, there was no getting up until everything was consumed, whether I was done or not. And so that really messes with our self-regulation, and kids have that ability to regulate how much they need, not just from a caloric standpoint, but also macronutrients. So if we give kids the tools and the right presence of foods on the table at the right time, they should eat protein when they need it or eat less if they've had too much. They should eat as many carbs as they need and fat and so on. They would be making those decisions based on the nutrients their body needs. Mm-hmm. So kids don't typically eat a balanced meal in one sitting, especially younger kids. They may eat their first, one meal. Breakfast might be mostly carbs that they're gravitating to, but then they're having more of the non-starchy fiber at another meal. Then they're having maybe more protein at dinner, or it depends on what's being served when. So to answer your question, it's kids are fickle too. They will say they want something and then they get it and they're not feeling like that anymore. When you make a meal plan, you say, this week we're going to have fish on Thursday, and then it comes to Thursday and you're like, I really don't feel like fish, right? So it's similar with kids. They sometimes don't know what they want. Mm-hmm. And that's why I also suggest not asking your kids what they want to eat, because they really don't know, and how you prepare it may not be the way that they're expecting it.
So Danielle, just to clarify, should we start with an empty plate for the kids and let them help themselves to the portion size they want?
That is ideal. Yes. To let them, give them that sense of control. Or because they're not able to decide or control what food is going on the table for the meal or snack. So let them decide what they choose to go on their plate. That in itself can be really motivating for a child to be able to have that option. Now, they may and very well likely put their favorite foods on the plate first, but they also may surprise you and put other things there as well. Even if they don't eat them, just getting the food on their plate is a first step.
Right. Another thing which when we feed children, they just, make that pukey, they're just going to puke, like that kind of a sound, And we as parents get scared and then we do as they wish. This is a very common tactic which both my kids use on me and I fall prey to that. Do you have a strategy on that?
Yeah, so there's a difference between gagging and choking.
Yeah.
Right? There's parents think as soon as their child makes that terrible sound, oh my gosh, my child's choking, but it's actually not. If you can hear a sound, that's gagging. If they if there is no sound, that's choking. And so it's okay. It's especially for a younger child, gagging is actually a part of the developmental process. So your gag reflex is at the front of your mouth. And that's why you see babies and so on, toddlers putting things in their mouth, like toys and everything else that's not food, to push back that gag reflex. So we still have it, but it's way back here. But when they're born, it's up here. So you see at a young age, they start gagging quite, with even just something slightly in their mouth as they start solid. So that is a normal reaction. Now, if a child's gagging with just the food being in the room, there may be some type of sensory issue. It might be sensory blockage in terms of the smell of a food. Right, I have a client whose child, anytime he smells curry, he gags. He can't be in the room when the mom is cooking a curry. So there's that. Now, gagging, once the food gets in your mouth, that might be more oral motor related, not knowing how to manage it, or maybe the texture of the food was off-putting. So, and sometimes kids can be overly dramatic too. So their gagging is just to make you, really make it clear to mom that I'm not eating this food and I'm going to, I'm going to pretend that I'm getting sick. So in often cases, that is what a child's doing, is that they're just playing up their dislike of the foods that you never offer it again. It's nothing to worry about unless there's actual vomit or the child seems like they're in distress.
Because everybody says we should make our kids eat rainbow foods, but how to do that? Because
it sounds impractical.
Yeah, right. Well, we focus so much on eating. And eating really should be the last step. we can't control what goes in our kids' mouths. So I always tell parents, you know, focus on the things you can control. So one thing, you know, getting a variety of food on the table. So making sure, we tend to fall into a rut of making the same meals over and over again, and then kids' lists, food lists are shrinking. So doing, yeah, making sure you're changing things up, not just for your kids, but also for yourselves, and then the nutritional variety. Then we want to look at some other options. So exposure is a big one. Even if your kids are not eating something that's new, at least they're seeing it, and it can become familiar the more they see it. The other thing is getting your kids to get familiarized and comfortable with foods from a sensory perspective. So eating is the most difficult thing we do as humans. It's the only human task that uses all of the sensory systems, but yet we expect our kids to just put food on their plate and expect it to go in the mouth. But, you know, do they like the way it smells? Can they handle the way it feels? Is it, is it appealing to them? Look, the appearance of food is a big one, which is why I often recommend parents take their kids to restaurants, and because restaurants have nailed it, right? They do testing and they present food in a very appealing way, and it's consistent. So every time, it's going to be similar. But my kids have tried a lot of new foods going to a restaurant. So one thing I'll do is before we go, I'll call the restaurant, make sure we have an appetizer on the table. That's something my kids haven't eaten yet. So when we get there, the food, it comes out right away. You don't have any cranky, hungry kids making a scene at the restaurant. But if they're hungry, you walk into a restaurant, you're not that hungry. Then you start to smell like the aroma. You look at the menu and now your appetite's building. So that's where, you know, my daughter's tried mussels for the first time, oysters, olives, pickle, such interesting foods because it was there on the table and they were hungry. So restaurants are a great one.
If you are enjoying this conversation, please subscribe to us and give us a 5-star rating on the platform you're listening to. Thank you.
Also focusing on the aspect of play, like kids learn through play in virtually everything they do, especially at a young age. So food being the most difficult experience that they have or most challenging experience, we should be allowing our kids to play with food. Now, that doesn't mean it has to be messy. It doesn't have to be, create a disaster in your kitchen, but it can be as simple as getting them involved in making something, getting them to pick a recipe, giving the recipe their own name so they can take pride in it, and getting them to interact with foods and just talk about, how does this feel? Do you like the way this feels? Like, what other foods feel like this? Or what other foods smell like this? Or can you smell this food? Does it have a big smell? Does it have a little smell? Doing those types of things and focusing on the sensory aspects of food when you're talking to your child and not expecting them to necessarily eat it right away, because they need to get comfortable and know that they can handle it once they have the sensory exposures.
Daniela, you just mentioned talking about food. Should we do that even while we're having meals? Because most of the times my kids eat well if I'm maybe reading out a story to them or we are planning to go on a picnic. But to increase the sensory level or their involvement, should we discuss that on the dinner table?
So talk about the food that's on the table?
Yes, or food in general?
So the thing about when we talk about food with kids or when we're at the table, often it's in a way that is trying to get them to eat something. Yeah. Do you like it? Is it too hot? Is it too cold? Why aren't you eating this? You ate it yesterday. You need your vegetables. Like, when we talk about food, we're saying it in a way that's exerting control. Mm. And 87% of parents are shown in research to try and control their food's intake. So I always tell parents, like, when you talk about food, just take note on what is your intention? is it to get your kids to put something in their mouth? Or are you just talking about, did you know that this food, do you know how this food is grown? Or did you know that this is actually, a tomato is actually a fruit and not a vegetable? Like, you can talk about food in that way that makes it interesting for the child and isn't going to be interpreted as a tactic or a ploy to get them to actually eat it.
Okay. When you said just seeing the food in the plate is also, you know, one step closer towards trying that food out. Can you elaborate on this? And maybe this would be a small win for the parent. Should the parent look at it that way?
So, yeah, you know, instead of celebrating the fact that your child is, you know, eating the food, which doesn't always happen, it can be a real, it can be a downer for parents if that's all we're using to dictate whether we've been successful at a meal. So looking at other things your kids are doing is important. So, you know, did they come and sit at the table a little bit longer? Did they get a food on their plate? Did they help serve something or set the table? So, you know, acknowledging your child's progress in other ways that isn't just eating related will make it easier for them to want to come to the table next time, and also just make it more enjoyable so it doesn't feel like it's a constant fight. And we're, you know, we're very good at looking at things that are not working with our kids when, you know, there's an opportunity to focus on the positive and the things that they are doing well. So as an example, your child may not be getting up and down from the table, whereas another family may be struggling with that. And so we overlook it because our child isn't eating vegetables, but that other family, the child eats vegetables, but doesn't sit down at the table, right? So it's like, we got to look for those things that are working really well. And as a parent, parenting is tough, and it's easy to look for all the things that we're failing at, but that's exhausting because it's never going to be perfect, but you can definitely work, you know, focusing on progress versus perfection is important.
Very well said, because many a times, especially at kids' parties, you see a lot of parents discussing, oh, your child didn't eat this. And is he a picky eater? And the kids tend to overhear this. And then sometimes it just sticks in their mind. It's like labeling.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's what we hear as kids. I can remember distinctly certain things that were said to me at, it was like one point in time. It was like a 10-second conversation that has stuck with me for decades, right? And so, yeah, our kids, whether it comes from us or comes from somebody else, we don't realize what our kids hear. And so it's important to be, constantly be aware of how we're approaching food, and even not just to our kids, but also ourselves, right? Some parents will say, oh no, I can't eat that. I'm gaining too much weight, right? Or I'm on a diet. Well, kids hear that. Then they think, well, maybe I shouldn't be eating this, or, you know, and they start to have those emotional connections to food that are not productive.
I really like the point where you mentioned food was hard. Food is very hard to eat for the kids, because whenever my son sees some nice new type of food, he comes and tells me that, Mom, I want to eat this, but I can't. Can you feed me today? And sometimes I get surprised that, why is it so? Because generally he eats by his own, but if it's a new food, I have to sit down, take a fork, knife, and feed him.
Yeah, my daughter used to do that as well. And, you know, one thing that's really helped, it's funny you say that, because there's parents, sometimes we're so busy and so overwhelmed that we don't sometimes have the energy to figure out, what do I say, feed themselves, or what do I get, how do I serve this creatively, or how do I get my child to interact with foods and, you know, play with the food in a way that's controlled.
Daniel, one question that's still bothering me is it okay if the kids are eating slow and finishing their lunch or dinner in like an hour or so? And how can we help them eat faster?
Thank you for asking that.
Yeah, you know, generally I like to keep meals like 20 to 30 minutes long. And because any more than that, then you feel like you're feeding your kids all day.
Absolutely.
Yes. Eating faster, just, you know, no screen time, no distractions, and really, it's sometimes they're going to make mistakes and just not eat as much. So I just give them a warning beforehand and let them know, you know, the meal's ending soon. We're going to put the food away, so this is your last chance. If you want to eat a bit more, have that. So giving them a heads up that the food is going to be put away soon can help expedite the speed of which they eat. However, if they're not that hungry, they're just not going to eat that fast.
And another thing is, on working weekdays, everyone is busy for in the mornings. So breakfast and lunch are really quick. And dinners are generally the time where we can actually sit with the kid for 30, 40 minutes and eat with them. But then should we still try to introduce new foods for breakfast and lunch, especially if the child is taking a tiffin box and we kind of know that he will not eat something new, but should we continue challenging him?
So for breakfast is one of the best times of the day to offer something new because they're coming out of a fast. They've not been eating for a while, so they should generally hungry, and breakfast tends to be so generally easier. So I like to just have a rotation of at least three breakfast foods that you can, three to five, that you can rotate through. As opposed to what happens is I find most families, they have one or two breakfasts that they're serving every day, when it's such a great opportunity to provide and to introduce different foods. And did I answer your question on that?
Yes, for breakfast. But for the tiffin boxes, if, as you mentioned, we should continue challenging the child. So should we do that? Because if he misses that one meal, he's hungry the whole day in school. He's back by, say, 4 o'clock. So, or should tiffin boxes be the easier foods, which we know the kids will definitely eat?
Yeah, so you're talking about lunch boxes, right?
Yes. Oh, yes, lunchtime.
Yes, yes. Okay, so yeah, for sending them off to school, I try to include, you know, something that they can eat in there, because school is, in particular, it's a bit of sensory overload for kids. There's just so much going on. They're easily distracted. And so if it's a more challenging food, or especially if you don't want to make the whole lunchbox, you know, challenging, right? So you want to have at least a couple things there that you know that they can eat well. This way, they're at least getting some nourishment. And then when you get them from school, then you can use it as an opportunity to get some more variety into them.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, that does answer my question.
Thank you.
So I think we covered quite a bit. I think we spoke about seven, eight strategies. And I'm sure a lot of, you know, questions which were our daily struggles, which were answered today. So thank you so much, Daniel, for making it, you know, easy for us to understand our child's behavior towards food, and how can we help them to, you know, approach it better, and what should be our approach, most importantly. So thank you so much for helping us today, and we had a great conversation with you.
It was wonderful. Thank you for the great questions. And yeah, I'm happy to support your audience.
Absolutely. Yes.
Sure. Thank you so much, Daniel. It was really helpful to talk to you.
We hope that you enjoyed this conversation just as much as we did and got good takeaways. To make it even more easy for you, we have two downloadables for you all. The first one is on 10 questions you should ask your child at mealtimes to avoid fights over food. And the second one is 60 high calorie and nutrition dense foods. These are really helpful. So if you would like them, all you need to do is go on our Instagram page, Partners in Upbringing, and tag three of your friends in our picky eater posts in the comment section, and you will get these links in your DM. Don't forget to participate. These are really good ones with a practical approach. Me and Kalyani have found it useful. And thanks to Daniel, she's agreed for us to share it with you all. So see you guys on Instagram. Remember to tag your friends in any of our picky eaters post in the comment section. So see you next time. Until then, goodbye, take care, and happy parenting.
The content of this podcast is a copyright of the makers of this podcast, Partners in Upbringing. The information and recommendations presented in this podcast are for general information only, and any reliance on the information provided in this podcast is done at your own risk. This podcast should not be considered professional advice unless stated. Please refer to https://partnersinupbringing.buzzsprout.com for further details.